Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
10:45 in the morning. It's Monday, the 5th of August, and we're still alive. We're doing all right.
We're doing okay. I've hit record. It's the first. It's the first Monday, so it's Black Monday, isn't it?
Is this Black Monday? Is this when the 2-for-1 stop? Is that why?
I think it's when it starts.
Ah. Yeah. Okay.
You've been coming here for how long now?
I don't know. I'm not a performer, so I don't worry about ticket sales.
Oh yeah, that's fair.
People either listen to what I do or they don't. It doesn't really bother me either way.
Oh god, that must be nice.
There's no pressure at all.
Genuinely, I was talking to another performer the other day, and they were like, "Oh, I'm really worried about not breaking even." And I was like, "I'm really worried about not having enough attention over the month." Like, the money matters, but the attention is the more key thing for me. You know,
I had a meeting yesterday with, there was a radio producer, there were some techies, various other people. The only people that weren't represented around the table at this lunch were performers.
Mm. And we what a surprise.
And we were joking. It's like, actually, we're the only ones getting paid here, aren't we? Because the performers aren't. Mm. You know, even performers that are doing very, very well may break even, may make £100. Mm. You know, there's very little in it for them. And it really, we say this every year, it needs to be addressed.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask the Industry podcast, episode 130. I'm comedian Simon Kane, and for those of you new to the show, this is the podcast where I interview the most influential people from the worlds of stand-up, comedy, radio, and today, podcasting and comedy reviewing. Martin Walker is the former editor and head reviewer at Broadway Baby and Scots Gay. He now makes his living interviewing comedians for his podcast-turned-radio show, On The Mic. We talked about why he stopped reviewing, his thoughts on what makes a good and bad reviewer, how to get a review at the Edinburgh Fringe, the common mistakes comedians make when doing their own PR, the cost of doing The Fringe and how this is impacting the diversity of the acts coming up, left versus right-wing comedy, what he prefers to watch and why, and so much more. This was a very rich and in-depth chat that I'm sure both of us said some things that not everyone is going to agree with, from why he would have Louis C.K. on his radio show, to why he thinks there should be less stand-up on TV, to how quotas damage the arts. I think there's loads of talking points in here, and what I'm really enjoying about the last couple of episodes I've been putting out have been the openness and honesty of all the guests to be able to express themselves and their views about how they see the industry, both in a historical and a future sense. This episode was recorded at Sweet Venues a few days into the Edinburgh Fringe 2019, and even though we're only 4 or 5 days in, you can hear the pressures and opinions piling up from both myself and Martin. I really hope you enjoy this. Before I hit play, I want to quickly flag that I am doing Perth and Adelaide next month, that's February 2020, and Wellington/Dunedin in March 2020 with my award-winning sellout 5-star review 2019 show Every Room Becomes a Panic Room When You Overthink Enough. If you live in any of those cities or live nearby and can get there or know people that do, please tell them about the show. Please forward on the links to some friends. The links are all in the show notes. I won't bother doing all the dates because no one wants to hear that right now, but if you can support me, that'd be great. It's my first time out in Australia. I've got loads of podcasts planned when I'm out there. Any support you can offer would be massively appreciated, as this is one of the biggest things that I've ever taken on in my comedy career. I'm also doing my second London-based dog-friendly comedy night at the Bloomsbury Theatre next weekend. It's Saturday the 18th of January. It's from 6 to 8pm. You can bring your pup and watch some of the best comedians do their joke. If you click the link in the description, you can see who's on the lineup. I, at the time recording, recording, do not have it confirmed, but I do have some amazing names that I've spoken to and have penciled in for that one. If you have a little look in there, there might also actually be the ticket links for the April and May shows, and I've managed to sort out the headliners for those. I've got Sindhu V on in April, and I've got Sarah Pascoe in May. So if you would like to come and see them performing with their dogs, please come and bring your dog. Some of the profits are going to be going to Batsy Dogs Home, so it's just a lovely community spirited gig where we all get to enjoy lovely comedy and lovely dogs, two of my favorite things in the world. I'm also, before I did say it'd be quick, but here we go, I'm also doing 3 dog friendly shows at the Glasgow Fringe. I won't actually be there because I'll be, as I said, in Australia and New Zealand, but I'm getting my good friend Kimmy Loughton to take the reins for those shows. The lineups should have all been sorted by this point, so please don't email in and ask me for a spot just yet, but it's on every Sunday of the festival, the 15th, 22nd and 29th, so if you would like to get a ticket for that and bring your dog down to watch some comedy in Glasgow, that's the best place to do it. It's at the Dry Gate from 5 to 7pm every Sunday of the Glasgow Comedy Festival. Right, if you're new here, please don't forget to hit that subscribe button. If you're old here, please do remember to give us an honest, ideally positive review in iTunes. And either way, please don't forget to join the Facebook group. It's called Ask the Industry Podcast, and it's on Facebook, obviously. But for now, this is Martin Walker.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think the problem is that performers, exactly what I just said there, they want to perform more than they like the money side of it. And as much as the money side is important, it's a really weird one, because the minute you start to tell people, oh, my main goal is breaking even or making a profit, there's this vibe around you of like, yes, oh, you're money grabbing, or you're selling out, all that sort of stuff. It's such a weird
or it might be that you can come from a working class background, you don't have a lot of money, and you actually need to make some money to break even during August to be able to do it at all. Completely. And what worries me is that we get hearing fewer and fewer working class voices as they're being priced out.
Oh, completely. There's Best in Class this year, the showcase with Sian Davies, isn't it? She runs that.
Yes.
And she's doing great work with that, because I think it's really offering a lot of working class comedians to come up, but also like to cost promote their shows in a way that I think would have been harder just if they couldn't do a compilation and, you know, sort of exit flyer together. I know what you mean. Right. I think a lot of people are getting priced out. I wouldn't call myself working class. I don't know where I'd put myself, to be honest with you. It's a weird situation. But I think, yeah, it's pricing me out.
Yeah.
I mean, like, and I do okay. I'm a writer, so I do all right in terms of, you know, money throughout the rest of the year. But this year has been very expensive. And I mean, you're only here for a week, you said?
I'm popping up and down. I was initially supposed to be only here for a week, but, you know.
Yeah. So you're going to be here all week, month. There's lots of kids shows. You can bring your kids to kids shows.
It's great. Where else would you want to be on the planet? Yeah. This is the thing. While comedians and everybody else are prepared to come up here and work for next to nothing, or work their arses off. Can I swear, by the way?
You can swear all you want.
And work their arses off and make a loss, then people will carry on doing it. And you know, it's not until people actually start saying enough is enough that, you know, things aren't going to change, are they?
I agree with that up to a point, because, like, so I mean this has nothing to do with what I was going to ask you about, but I've been working on a petition to sort out to get basically our voices, performers at the table of when they're doing legislation up here for properties. We don't want to dictate anything, because we mostly don't live here. Like, the majority of performers aren't based in Edinburgh, so a lot of them aren't even based in this country, so it's not that. I just think Edinburgh Fringe should be representing us at these conversations. Yes. And Andy Whiteman, for example, who, you know, is changing a lot of legislations, and for the better in a lot of ways. You know, like, I think local people should have the ability to not have an endpoint on their tenancy. I wish that was a thing in London, to be honest with you, for people that live there. But for short-term people like us, it's causing a lot of hassle. And
it's going to be more and more difficult, isn't it? Next year, that's going to really kick in, and tenant, you know, landlords aren't going to be able to turf out the tenants for a month.
No,
you
know? No, and I don't think they should, but I also don't. I think they're not thinking about the fringe, and at this current stage, I don't know. It's make or break for a lot. I mean, you know, I came closer than I've ever come last year to breaking even, and this year humble brag.
Congratulations.
Or whatever. Thank you. When I say closer, it still wasn't close. But you know what I mean. Like, it gets less. The debt gets less every year. But the point is that my flat tried to charge me three times what they normally charge me this year. Yeah. And for it to go, so it's normally a grand, for it to go to that's a three, is gonna cripple me financially. Yes. It's just not gonna happen.
Yes.
You know, and you know, especially with my lack of care of money apparently.
You know, really?
No, it's definitely not a lack of care. But what do you do? What do you do as a performer? And there's no way of addressing it because I mean I've tried to get Equity on board and they've been, let's say they've been there for the conversations, but they're currently not. They wanted me to launch under my name, and I was like, "You're the union. Mm-hmm. I'm the individual. I'd like to be protected. That's the point." Which was a weird one, although that wasn't the overwhelm. That was only one person who felt like that. And yeah, so I don't really. I worry. I worry about the festival. And I rang. That's my point. So I rang up the Fringe Central and I said, "What if I got all the major venues to sign a thing to say we will boycott it next year if comedians are not supported?" They laughed. They literally laughed on the phone and went, "You're not going to not come though, are you?" So I agree with your point, but I don't think. I think if I didn't come because I was holding a stance, someone would fill that space.
Yeah. The fact is that more and more people come here every year, not less. And while more and more people are coming, then more and more it's going to be charged as property gets more and more scarce. Yeah, it's I don't know how it's all going to end. We'll see. No. It's still the best place in the world to be. I mean, we're still August, that's the problem. We're still we're still going to be. I think camping is probably an option for next year.
I've heard people camping. I've got my friend Jim. He's living in Glasgow and coming over every day. Yes, genuinely.
Yes. Yes.
It's crazy. But it's only an hour, which is less than a London commute, I suppose.
Yeah, you could stay in Fife or something, just over the Forth Road, but you know.
Oh,
just,
I had a look at Fife, that's quite expensive. Glasgow's
cheaper.
Okay, yeah, but Fife's quite expensive. So I looked at Aberdeen, just because I did a preview there, and I wondered how much it would cost to stay there.
It's a bit of a distance from Edinburgh there. That's bit of a trek from the Loft Bar at
night.
Yeah,
but I was looking at, this is what we're talking about, I don't stay out late anymore. it's so nicer to have your evenings, you know? Oh, wow. Okay, so you're a reviewer.
No.
Or would you still call yourself, because you have been for many
years. Yes. Many years. That's my background, I suppose, yeah.
Okay, so how would you label what you do now?
I guess I'm a co-host / producer of a radio show. That's what I'm doing now.
Okay.
There is a little bit of reviewing in there, but it's mostly interviews. I just want to keep the whole thing positive.
Okay.
You know, having just slagged off. Well, in terms of the performers anyway, I think there are enough people bashing the performers. The performers are getting very little out of this in many ways, certainly financially. So it's a way of bigging up the Fringe, bigging up the comedians at the Fringe, really. Yes, a few reviews, but only the positive stuff. You know, if I see something that's not very good, I just won't mention it.
Well, that's it, because there's a few smaller publications that will only publish it a 4 or 5 star. They'll see other things, but they'll only publish it 4 and 5. And I always wonder whether that's damaging than good, because to an outsider who maybe doesn't know that's all they're publishing, it might look like they're just being overly liberal with the stars.
Yeah, kind of stars inflation. That's true. But as long as they're explicit about what they say, about what they're doing and why they're doing it, I think that's perfectly fine. You know, especially on the Free Fringe where there are a lot of people coming up for the first time, there are a lot of people who haven't had time to preview or whatever, and they're working out a show over the month, you know, so to turn up on day 3 and review something that's not even a show yet, you know, is unfair. So yes, just review the shows that are ready, review the shows that you enjoy, and we don't need a page of 1-star reviews in The Scotsman. You know, that doesn't help anybody.
No.
It's quite entertaining to read, unless you're actually on it, but
it doesn't really
help anybody, does it?
You say that, I normally go and see some of the 1-stars.
Do you?
Because I don't believe anything really deserves a 1-star.
No.
I know that sounds really sort of
optimistic
about me, but like, I think if you paid this amount of money to come here and you've previewed it properly, and I mean that might be an issue, but if you previewed it properly,
and you've
spent enough time on it, and you've, you know, at least self-aware enough to know what needs work, I think everything at the festival should be a 2-star and above.
Yeah.
Even by its own, you know, like I said, the amount it costs and the amount of time it takes to get something up here.
I think you're right. I think I first saw Lewis Schaefer on the back of reading a 1-star review of one of his shows, actually, and I thought it was brilliant. So you're right. But it's writers trying to express themselves and their own prejudices rather than actually addressing the show. They have expectations of a show that were never going to be met, or were the wrong expectations in the first place. And so they're measuring the show against expectations rather than what they're actually seeing. In other words, they're not going to see the show with an open mind. And for someone who works for, you know, a broadsheet publication, publication or a national publication. That's unforgivable. But,
oh, completely.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, I start every show now by just going, can you raise your hand if you've had seen one show? Right, lower if you've seen two, three, and just see how many. I had someone in who had seen nine shows yesterday, like 2 days
really?
Ago. Yeah, and I was like, you are not going to laugh.
No.
there's just no way. Like, it was just giving myself an excuse at the top, but I was like, what are you running from? Like, there's no need to see 10 hours of comedy in a day.
10 hours of comedy.
Could you imagine sitting watching 10 hours of Friends in a day, or whatever, you know, sitcom you like? You know, it's like, by the end of it, you're not laughing, you're just plowing through it because you think you've got to get to the end of the series. I felt really bad for the guy.
I've done six shows, I think, is my limit, I think, and that was too many.
That's too many. But I feel like they should put that in reviews. I feel like they should say, this was show 5 of 6 of the day or whatever.
Yeah.
And I got a text before telling my dog died. That's why I was horrible. Because you don't mention how you're feeling before the show. You don't mention you haven't eaten since 9 a.m.
That's right. But you shouldn't bring that to the review, which is why I got involved with Fringe Pick a few years ago.
Yes,
because that was very much reviewing reviewers, and Fringe Pick reviewed me as a reviewer.
Yeah, I saw that.
Slated me. Yeah. And I read it and thought, that's so well written, even though they're slagging me off, that's really funny. You know, I'd like to get involved, and that's how I got involved with that. And I'm really stopped being a reviewer from that point. Because Liam Malone, who ran Fringe Pig, said, you know, this is not having a positive effect on the Fringe. You know, these negative, badly written reviews are undermining the Fringe. And I sort of buy that argument. I really do. I think there's a place for good criticism and a place for well-researched criticism, but not for a free publication handing out 1 or 2 star reviews about shows they don't understand. You know?
Well, let's start there then. Let's go from, like, what publications do you read and rate in terms of reviews? We'll go with the positive. It's not the ones you don't rate.
Well, I don't know about publications. There are certain writers I enjoy reading, but that's not necessarily to say that I agree with everything they say.
No, of course, that's fair, because, you know, you're backing the jockey, not the horse, you know, like, yeah.
But I enjoy reading Claire Smith at The Scotsman. Having said that, there were a couple of reviews she wrote a couple of years ago, which she and I had heated discussions and debates over. But overall, I like her tone. It's not about her, it's about the show, and I enjoy that. I also enjoy reading her features writing. I think she's an excellent writer.
Okay, so she's the one to look out for in your mind?
She's the one I go to.
Okay. So,
sorry, Copstick.
Okay. I wasn't going to mention any other reviews of that.
But I like Kate Copstick. I get on very well with Kate Copstick socially, but I disagree with her as much as I agree with her writing. It's quite caustic. It's just that, as she would admit, you know, she has things she likes and things she doesn't, and she has her own agenda. I don't think that's the correct approach. Personally, I think you should go into any show with a completely open mind and address what you see on the stage and not bring anything else into it.
But that's almost impossible to do as a person, because you bring your entire life baggage to every kid's situation, surely.
Well, it is possible, because you're not talking about you, you're talking about your response to a thing that's happening in front of you. And if it's a good show, you know, if it's a good show, then that should be the focus of your writing. It's not, as a reviewer, it's not about you. It really, really isn't. I can't say this strongly enough. It's not about the reviewer, it's about the performer.
Do you ever read back any reviews you've done?
Yes.
Okay. Because I could feel it in your voice, but I didn't want
to... Oh, my word. Well, I first got into reviewing. I came up to Edinburgh just after my 21st birthday for The Fringe and stayed, okay? That's basically as you can when you're 21 years old, right?
Yeah.
And then a couple of years in, I thought, actually, I can't afford to see half of what I want to see. Mm. A mate of mine was running a magazine called Scots Gay Magazine. Mm-hmm. So I said to him, look, can you get me a press pass so I can go and see all these shows for free? Mm. He did, and I did, and I started writing reviews, having had no training, didn't know anything about anything. Luckily, it was the days before the internet, so you can't read any of this shit anywhere.
Have they not done, because like some newspapers have like taken all their archive stuff and put it online?
If they have, I certainly won't be drawing attention to it.
Okay, fine. Don't Google that now,
don't
everyone.
Don't Google that now, because it's terrible. I mean, oh, I did not know what I was talking about. And so I learned to review on the job, you know, by doing it a lot. And, you know, in the days before social media, in the days before the internet, you've got the space and the time to do that, because nobody's kind of coming back to you and saying, you know, what's this rubbish? Nothing went viral, you know. The phrase hadn't even been invented at the time. So I did that for a number of years. Years later, I found myself editing the publication and running know, 30 strong reviews team. It was at that point I thought, actually, I'm not seeing any shows. I'm just doing admin now. So I left Scotsgate, went to Broadway Baby, was their comedy editor for 3 years. I was then poached by Fringe Pig, worked for them for 3 years. Fringe Pig is no more. Broadway Baby's still around. Whilst all that was happening, I've been running a podcast of interviews for the last 5-6 years. Yeah, Union Jack Radio said, see that podcast you're doing, do you fancy putting it on the radio? And I said, give me some money. And they said, here, have some money. And I said, okay, I'll do whatever you want.
Do you know, I've got another friend who's doing a show on Union Jack, and he said that, and I don't know if you've experienced this, and I can take this out if you don't want me to talk about it, but he said that he gets slightly worried about telling people what station it's on since Brexit.
Absolutely. And I get worried about what station it's on in Scotland. So the first thing I did was recruit a very Scottish co-host.
You know? I can imagine,
You know, because, to have an English person standing in Scotland hosting a show on Union Jack Radio, the optics aren't great, are they? So I can use the term optics in radio? Probably not. But yes, it comes from Jack FM, which is an Oxford-based station. Somebody had the bright idea, right, we're going to go national, guys. We're called Jack FM. What should we call ourselves? Union Jack. It's not Brexit FM. It's more Mr. Bean than Mr. Farage.
I can imagine the title of that radio station sometimes divides. I've listened to his show on it, and I've listened to your stuff on it, and I think the problem is that it's the triggerness of the relationship people have with words now.
Yes.
Is that, you know, if especially in the current climate of where Brexit's going and all that sort of stuff. So I wondered how that affected you and how that affected how you put together the show.
I'm going to be very, very honest with you, because that's the only way I can do it. There are regular guests of mine who I've had on my podcast every year that have not done it this year because it's made for Union Jack Radio.
Interesting. So, but do they know it's just Jack FM Union?
Yeah. Oh, it's okay. Just they don't want to be associated with something called Union Jack Radio.
See, that surprises me.
And it's some of the bigger names. Actually, some of the bigger names are the more sensitive.
I can imagine that, because especially, and this is something I want to talk to you about in terms of Broadway Baby and clickbait and that society that was coming in. Mm-hmm. A bit more as you were kind of leaving into moving to Fringe Pig, and I imagine, well, let's talk about that in a sec. It's if you're a bigger name, your name sometimes becomes SEO. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it becomes something that people might just search for, and they're not even looking for an article about you, they're just looking for your name, and you want the click as a publication because that's how you make your money. So I can imagine why, if you're, let's pick a, you know, Russell Kane, for example, right? If you're him who, you know, has a name that would get a lot of traffic in general, you might not want your name coming up next to Union Jack, even if with a little bit of digging and a moment's knowledge, you know it's not him on a right wing or whatever it would be.
Well, to be clear, I haven't approached Russell Kane, and
I wasn't trying to throw him under the bus at all.
Absolutely spot on.
It's just he's my namesake.
I've had a chat with a very well known comedian who is a friend, actually, who I've known for many years, who always comes on the show, and she said, I understand what Union Jack is, but people googling me won't understand what that is, you know, which is exactly the point you made. I'm sorry, Martin, but I'm not going to do it. Luckily, when I put the word out to get comedians to interview, it was massively oversubscribed.
Yeah,
anyway,
sure.
You know, we were looking for 100, we got around 150, so yeah. we didn't have any issues. And I got my interview with Basil Brush, which is one that I really wanted.
Nice.
I met Basil. Oh my God.
Nice work.
I can retire now.
Oh my God. I got an email from a person who I can't name until it's been confirmed, who complimented my podcast and asked to come on. And when someone you really like and would be like on your top 10 dream guests emails you, it's like, the last 7 years are worth it. Like, the amount of times I've sat late at night editing something and thought, no one's listening to this bollocks, why am I doing it, what's going on? And then you go, oh no, actually they might have listened to it. It's quite nice.
I did Simon Munnery last year, and he'll be on this year as well. And when Simon Munnery compliments you on something you've done, you're like, no, you don't compliment me, you're Simon Munnery. You're a bloody genius, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's nice when things like that happen.
Yeah, it's a very small, I mean, for this podcast, the audience is, I would call, big but small. Do you know what I mean? Like, because the community of the industry is quite small in general, but this tends to hit most of it, which I quite like. And as a result, I forget that people are listening sometimes, and I just sort of, you know what I mean?
The only way I can do this job is by forgetting people are listening.
Yeah, yeah.
I always refer to the listener. I assume that it's just one person listening.
Your son.
You know? So next dear listener, you know, if I start to think about actually what the listenership is, I wouldn't be. That's why I work in radio and I'm not on stage. I couldn't go on stage and do what comedians do, what they do. It's incredible. Yeah, anyone who can stand up on stage and say anything and do anything and make people laugh has my deepest respect. I think it's always a wonderful thing, and it's just something that I cannot do nor have any desire to do. I just admire those that do.
I have the same thing for other forms of art. I couldn't. I was watching a street performer the other day, and I said, I was with someone that, you know, they're just walking somewhere, and I said, I couldn't do a show just on the street like that. There's something about the openness of it.
Takes balls, doesn't it?
Yeah. And like to bring the crowd in, to keep them entertained, to get over the noise bleed of everything around you. Don't get me wrong, you know, they're hit and miss, you know, a lot of the time. And I live in London, where I go to Covent Garden fairly regularly, and you see really good ones and you see really fucking awful ones. But I still respect them both ways. It's the same reason why, you know, I respect a lot of other, like, general jobs. You know, like staff at venues and stuff. I give them as much respect as I can, because the way they deal with the public and the way they deal with, like, complaints and things, I couldn't do it.
The hardest job I ever had was my least well-paid one, and that was working very long shifts in a nightclub, you know, without a break for ages, behind a bar, collecting glasses. Did that for several years, and I've never worked harder. I've never been paid less. Anyone who does anything in hospitality, you know, those are the people that are working hard here. You know?
Oh, yeah. I feel like I have to constantly remind performers, just say something nice to people in the venue.
Exactly, because some comedians, when they're off stage, can be...
Yeah, I was going to say, I said you could swear, but don't worry about it.
We have, one of the nice things about working at Union Jack, actually, is that they're very hands-off in terms of creative decision-making. One of the things about the Edinburgh Fringe, as you know, it is quite cutting-edge and it is quite sweary.
Yeah.
And there are opinions expressed that can offend people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we put a trigger warning out at the beginning. Mm. You may hear opinions that you disagree with. You will hear strong language and adult stuff. And we can say what we like.
Yeah.
We've actually, a couple of nights, I don't know when this is going out, we're actually going to be playing a clip from Derek and Clive, you know, Peter Cook, Dudley Moore, something called The Critics, which is essentially just a string of swear words for three minutes. It's the most astonishing, it's hilarious. The reason we're playing it is I interviewed Phil Nichol, who got arrested on a Virgin train for swearing, and he said, I wasn't swearing, I was just singing Derek and Clive.
Oh, wow.
So we've got some context to it. And of course, the record was put out by Richard Branson on Virgin Records, so there's a nice little
circle.
So I'm looking forward to hearing Derek and Clive on the radio.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's
been a while.
It doesn't get played very often. No. I'm not sure ever, actually, because it's nice. They're very, very, they're lovely. You know, for all it's sometimes challenging because of the name, they're absolutely lovely, lovely to work for. And I speak to others who work for other broadcasters who have to deal with interference. I've had none of that. It's been terrific. They've just, I would certainly work with them again. And they have got quite an exciting future plan. They want to become sort of the radio version of Dave.
Okay.
And the new comedy directors, they're also the director of the Leicester Comedy Festival.
Jeff Rowe.
That's right.
Oh, I didn't know he was. Okay, that's what the job was.
So Jeff has got some exciting plans. It's great to be part of it.
So, can you hear how into Edinburgh we both are at this early stage of the festival? As I said, we're only 4 or 5 days in at the time of recording, and I'm really enjoying how much the festival is moulding a lot of our views in this podcast and is also shaping our discussions. I'm really enjoying reflecting on what mattered to me during August and clearly what mattered to Martin, and the diversions and offshoots of the conversation that we were having clearly shows what we were thinking about. I hope that you're getting loads from this. I think if you're going to Edinburgh and want a review or some sort of coverage, this really gives you some inside track. Now it's time for the mid-roll ad. Don't forget that while it's playing, you still have time to give us a review, ideally 5 stars, or potentially a 4-star that reads like a 5 would be just as good, or a donation either on PayPal or a regular one on Patreon. It only takes 30 seconds to do, and you can zone out the advert while you do it. How exciting would that be? You give back to this community of people that are giving you absolutely amazing content, and you don't even have to listen to the advert. We all like to miss adverts. Here's your mid-roll.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And we're back! Quick reminder that I am doing Perth and Adelaide Fringe next month, and I'm doing Wellington and Dunedin in March 2020. With my award-winning, sell-out, 5-star reviewed 2019 show, every room becomes a panic room when you overthink enough. If you live in any of these places, please do come and watch, and if you can bring friends, or if you don't live there and you know friends that do, please tell them about the show. I would really appreciate any and all support you have to offer, as this is the biggest, both in terms of scale and in terms of cost, thing that I have ever done in my comedy career. So any help you can give me would be massively appreciated. Also, the second dog-friendly comedy night in London is happening next weekend. That's Saturday, January the 18th in London at the Bloomsbury Theatre from 6 till 8pm. And if you want to bring your pup to a show in Glasgow, I'll be doing some dog-friendly comedy nights in Glasgow at the Glasgow Comedy Festival every Sunday of the festival. That's the 15th, 22nd and 29th of March. I won't be there. My good friend Kimmy Loughton will be covering for me at those shows. However, they're still going to be amazing, and I really have absolute faith in her and in the project itself. So if you would like to come and watch some absolutely outstanding comedians perform with their dogs, and you can bring your dog as well, check out the link in the show notes. Let's dive back into the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Radio is a weird one in that it's I think it's getting a bit of a resurgence thanks to podcasting. I think personally absolutely. I find it much more interesting than TV a lot of the time, because your mind has to do a lot more of the work, which I think is a good thing.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I understand mindless I watch YouTube a lot, you know, I love the mindless just throw colours at me and whatever, but often I go on a walk and stuff and I just I can't sort of stay reading, so like I have a book on or whatever.
In the car or when you're out jogging or whatever, you know, a podcast or a radio show is magnificent, and a lot of Radio 4 output is great, but a lot of it I like. The problem with Radio 4 is that you know this more than anyone, you know, you there's a good show in Edinburgh, 4 years later Radio 4 will broadcast it in a half hour shot. What I want to see us doing is, there's a good show in Edinburgh, let's put it on the radio now. I want to hear it tonight, I want to hear it tomorrow, not in 4 years time once a bunch of producers have kind of mangled it.
So
that's what I'd like to see Radio Union Jack doing, you know, more instant live comedy. Wow, we've just discovered this good show around the corner at this little free fringe venue, we're going to put you on air tomorrow. That's my ambition.
I think that the only problem with that is that, you know, obviously comedy is can be such a visual medium, it could be slightly hard for certain acts, but
yes,
I do know what you mean. I'm sure some people are going to give me an email immediately after this, but the Netflix special, it was a great thing at the start, and now it just feels like they're just pumping out very similar shows with very similar voices.
Yes.
And even though they might look different or change, you know, sort of their dress or whatever it is, I'm not interested in a lot of them.
There's a style of comedy that seems to suit television, which is more observational. Yeah. It's the Michael McIntyre brand.
Which is fine. Funny. I'm not criticising the actual style. I just think I want to see something more.
Exactly. There's much more to comedy than that. And you know, and even if, you know, that's going to have less of an audience, even if it's more niche, you know, Simon Munnery should have his own TV show. It is absolutely, I cannot believe that someone like Simon Munnery, who is been at the cutting edge of stand-up comedy for 30 years, does not have his own TV show. And it's because his face doesn't fit. His style of comedy doesn't quite fit. You speak to any comedian and you go, who, and they'll all say Simon Munnery.
Mm. No, I the issue I think as well is, I mean, it's not even a risk-taking. I think a few years ago I would have argued it's a risk-taking thing for TV industry to not pay people in. And I might be wrong. I mean, I've interviewed a few people on this and it's my extrapolation of what they're saying. I think it's at a stage where there is too much disconnect between the TV industry and the live circuit.
Yes.
And so I think what happens is that the ones with the most budget or the ones with the agent with the most clout, or even if they've just been friends for 20 years and now they've got the friend in the thing, they drag them down, they say, come check this person out, and they go, oh, this should, you know, this will actually fit in, or this is actually us taking a risk, because it's, you know, whereas they haven't actually spent, like you have, watching six shows a day or whatever it is, they've just come over from the TV festival and watched two. Now, I might be wrong in that, there might be people actually doing that and seeing more, but if there are, I mean, like, you know, I ask around and say, hey, is anyone in? Is it, you know, people who are checking their ticket sales and stuff, and maybe they're actually buying tickets, maybe they're not doing the comp thing, and people don't know what they look like, but I would love to see more experimental comedy on TV, and I would. And you say it's a smaller audience. I think the only reason for that is because if you look at how each generationally there was sort of a predominant type of comedy that did well.
Yeah.
You know, like Monty Python. You know, then you wouldn't have maybe had observational. That would have been popular, but it wouldn't have been, you know, in like the slapsticky type, you know, bottom stuff. And
yes.
You know, so you've got little phases. It's because it comes in waves and troughs, and you can't just have the wave.
Yes.
And now even with more TV and online, you should have more capacity to put more.
Well, there is more capacity. It's just that they're targeting comedians perhaps of a certain age. You know, they're looking for something new and fresh. They're not interested in someone who's been doing the circuit for 30 years.
Which is a horrible thing because they're better.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, I'm sorry.
Because they've been doing the circuit for 30 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, well, exactly. Not all of the ones who've been doing the circuit for 30 years.
but it's true.
But as a general rule, I mean, and no offense to any of my friends who are listening to this who have done, you know, 5 years or less or 10 years or less or whatever in comedy, you're just not as good as somebody who's been doing it 30 years. And
yes.
If you, I feel like you have to admit that to yourself as a performer. Yes.
If I had a TV hour, it would be Simon Munnery. It would be Ivor Dembina. It would be Bridget Christie. It would be Josie Long. It would be all of these comedians who have been doing it for years and are really, really good and who just don't get a sniff.
I pitched an idea of that to, so I was going to try and get the, you know, the old comedian of the year, but like people who are older than that. Yeah. We were going to go, if anyone who's like 50 and above are only allowed on this version of Live at the Apollo.
Sorry, Josie, you're not anywhere like 50.
Well, no, she's been going long enough to do it, but you're just not old enough to do it. Because also you get a different perspective on life. Yeah. You don't have to necessarily always have the ones with kids and marriage and all that stuff, because there's other ways
and
of contributing.
Also, old people,
you know,
all watch television.
Yeah,
they would love this stuff.
Oh my God, yeah, yeah. I think I joked about it the other night because I gave out a mailing list thing and this couple were signing up to it, and the woman signed up to it, and then the man took it and was about to, and she said, oh no, I've signed up for it, and I said, oh no, you might break up this year, you can sign up separately, just in like a jokey way, because they'll definitely want to come separately to the show next year. Do you know what I mean? Like, but it's the same thing where you think to yourself, you know, I'm courting a younger audience because I think they'll be around for as long as I will. But also, older audiences love my comedy.
And also, Simon Munnery is popular across the board. Yeah. You know, it's like Simon Munnery did Glastonbury, you know, a bit like Jamie Corbyn. People would be chanting his name because he's good. And young people don't
he
just
like
watch.
That, I don't think.
No, he wouldn't.
I mean, yeah.
but young people don't just watch young people. And that's the patronising assumption from TV programs. It's like, oh no, young people won't engage with that because they're over 30. Yeah. Young people would love someone like Simon Munnery.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everybody, you know, there's something in there for everybody because he's good.
Beck Hill tweeted something a little while ago, it was about 3 or 4 months ago now, where she said, just a gentle reminder, the reason you don't see as many females on TV is because commissioners think you don't want to see females on TV. Let them know you do if you do, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me, it was a bit like, that is probably got a ring of truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it has less of a ring of truth to it now, as I think there are quotas and things in certain channels, and there are also agendas on channels to make sure that they think like they're trying. I feel like some places are trying to start now to be on the right, to quote unquote the right side of history.
Yes.
Whereas historically they weren't actually giving a shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a weird one because of the change in, you know, so like if you look at Corbyn's track record, I've got issues with Corbyn, but let's just talk about him as a general hero for now. he has a general track record of voting a good way, in my opinion.
Yes.
you know, for pro rights of a lot of people.
Yes.
Right. Whereas you look at it now, there are some people who are doing it, but I think mainly because they realise that they're going to get called out for it otherwise.
They're late to the party, but they're at the party now, so fine.
Yeah, I'm not criticising being late to the party, but I am criticising, like, you know, just maybe make it clearer why you're doing it.
Yes.
Being more transparent. Even if you're doing it because you think, now I should be trying to do it for... Yes. You know, quota reasons or business reasons.
Yeah.
Just be honest about it. Yeah. I've got no issue with, you know, I spoke to a friend a couple of nights ago. I'll keep nameless because I'm assuming they won't want this going out as themselves. But they said, I know I'm not going to get the award. Like, yeah. we all know that white men are not going to win an award this year because we had our time 5-6 years ago. We know how it's going to go. And I said, first of all, that seems very defeatist because, frankly, they can offer anyone it still. Like, it's not a quoted, like, award for not white men. It's not ITV. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
It's not a thing.
But it's not ITV.
No. but you don't want to get me started on the ITV thing. But what I am saying is that there's a it has an agenda.
Yes.
Every award has to have an agenda because it's got a criteria. And that can change every year. And the judges change every year and their zeitgeist change every year. And I think it's more, you know.
I was speaking to a woman comedian who was nominated for award, was it last year or the year before? And her concern was, am I just here because of a quota? I mean, that's the issue with quotas.
That's the biggest problem with
quotas. You know, you see a woman on Have I Got News For You and some of the audience is going to be thinking they're only there because they have to have a woman on.
Mm.
And that doesn't benefit them.
No, it hurts their confidence.
We need to, and they're not actually there because they need a woman. They're right there because they're a bloody good comedian. So we need to look at this issue of quotas, and we need to. There has to be representation, but I'm not convinced that sort of approach is the right one. The one we did with our show this year, essentially, we'll interview as many people as we possibly can, and we've found ourselves reflecting, you know, in terms of gender balance, what the fringe is, accidentally, you know, without having to have a quota, and that's good. There are a lot of women comedians up here this year. You know, the ratio between men and women is quite healthy this year. It's not 50-50, but it's pretty healthy. But what we did notice is that we didn't sort of program the show over the month. We sort of threw all the names up into the air and saw who would drop more or less. And there was one episode that went out which was all women, and people noticed. It was just, you know, they didn't mention it when it was all men.
No. But this is I think so. I've read several books recently about equality and feminism and stuff. And the big one that stood out to me was called Invisible Women, and it's about the data gap between men and women and how most things are designed with only data from men, which is why a lot of women feel uncomfortable generally in life. And it's only just sort of coming through on that. And I had a whole chapter about quotas, and a lot of it was just saying, you know, in every area of life, from, you know, engineering to arts, every time a quota's done, it's had a very short term impact in terms of representation, and then a long term damage how people perceive women. And a lot of it is stuff you just said there, where it's questioning, am I only here for a quota?
Yeah, tokenism.
Exactly. Have I earned this? Are people going to be annoyed at me for not earning this? Have I taken it away from someone who has earned this? At the stage where I've moved into, you know, like, because at a certain point when you do a couple of panel shows, you might get, you know, they have you in their list of panel show people. It's a bit like, am I at the bottom of the list because I only got in that way? You know, all these sort of questions in your mind that you don't need when you've got TV cameras on your face.
Yes.
And you've got, you're trying to make everything joyful. I honestly would love to see more female voices. I'd love to see more people of color. The amount of times, you know, I've sort of got to a stage where it's more a people of color situation. I don't see enough of them on TV. And like, I saw a really good tweet. Someone tweeted something like, I want to have more women of color on my Twitter timeline. And I was going through like the suggestions. Just as, I know how this makes me sound like, oh, I'm just trying to be progressive. It just popped up. It wasn't even
You're
like
so
I was
woke, Simon.
I hate that phrase. Oh, please don't get me started on that phrase. It's a horrible phrase. But the thing is that, like, we should be trying to take in more voices and we should be listening more, and I understand that, but I just think the way TV in particular are going about it is actually doing more damage.
I think so. I agree with that, but nevertheless it needs to be addressed.
Oh, completely.
The reason I suppose I don't go on about it is that I don't actually have the answer, you know.
I've got to be honest,
I just don't think the you know, someone saying, right, we're not having any more male only panel shows anymore was the wrong approach, because then some of the audience, as soon as they see a woman, oh, that's their
they're not there on merit.
Well, actually, usually they are there on merit.
Yeah.
You know, it's just to announce that in that way
makes
it look like it's a token when it isn't. So
I think a female friend of mine said to me, first of all, they said, I didn't didn't know ITV did comedy, so that's, you know, enough.
I didn't.
No.
Do ITV do comedy?
Apparently, but I imagine.
They have this thing called Love Island. Is that comedy?
That's comedy. Yeah, that's comedy. It's shit, but it's comedy. but she said, if I had a script now, I wouldn't send it into them, because if they did make it, exactly what you said there, yeah, I would worry that my peers and the people watching it would be like, it's because no one else sent anything else in. Yeah. Or because it was, or even they would judge it harsher, because they'd be sitting there going, right, well, let's see what this woman, and you don't, and same with reviewers coming into a show after 9 shows, you don't want them going in with a preconception of what you're doing. You want them to be as clear as they can. And so, and also, like, the commissioner there has been commissioning for a while. You could have done this at any point. Like, why now? You're saying it like it's our fault, like, for applying.
Equally, I've yeah, and this will probably get me into trouble, but yeah, I interviewed a woman comedian the other day, and I said, so what's your show about? And she said, well, you know, I'm a woman and my show's about being a woman.
And I mean, no. If that, to be fair, if that's your show, fair play. You know, it's absolutely fine, because there's enough men doing a show about being a man.
Yes. So yes, but equally, if a man said, "I'm a man," doing the show's about being a man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's not. You know, I need a little bit more. And you know, what is it you're trying to say? Mm-hmm. And I think we all need to look beyond our own immediate identities, or what? Or what I'm saying this a little bit clumsy, but you know, if you're an openly gay man, do you only want to talk about being openly gay on stage, or do you want to talk about other shit as well?
Yeah,
do you want to talk about other stuff as well?
Swearing's fine. So, I love how you're censoring. It's like, yes, the internet's going to tweet you and go,
because of my
own interview, but you're swearing.
On my own show, we F and Jeff all the way through it. You see, yeah. So there's a, yep. So
you can't use substitute words. It's either the word or not. You can't say F and Jeff or the F word or whatever.
Can I not?
You
have to say, I fuck, have to say,
not.
Fuck,
yeah, that's
not
the rule, okay, on this one.
So these stupid cunts. but so I'm more interested, and I think there is a place, of course, for, you know, an openly gay man to talk about predominantly their gay experience. Of course there is. But what's more interesting to me is it's someone who takes that experience, makes it relatable, and also talks about other things and says, I am more than just this thing. I'm more than just my immediate identity. There is much more going on. That's much more interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, every person has several facets to it, and sexuality happens to be one. I understand why. Is S a letter? Straight, like, is that? I don't think it is in the
just Google is lesson, ladies and gentlemen, competition
in the LGBT. So you've got the LGBT, which covers all of the other ones. Is S now like a letter of like not being part of that group?
Cause no,
because if, okay, I just wondered whether that's
the only letter that isn't there. Do you know Frisky and Manish?
I do, yeah.
They do a brilliant song called LGBTQI, it goes through the entire alphabet.
Oh, nice.
And it's just a brilliant satire
on
this. You know, in an effort to be inclusive, you know, rightly, you know, the gay community is now tying itself up in knots, trying to include everybody.
Yeah,
and adding another letter is just, you know, come on.
Oh, no. For me, when I was a kid, it was LGBT.
Yes.
Like, that's where it stopped. And so for me, like, that an acronym is like PI. You know, like, I know 3.14.
Yeah.
But everything after that is just a guess. Like, I just got no idea what's happening after that. And like, and it's not my fault. It's just, I can't keep up with it.
You can't be. I think LGBT plus
is enough.
Is fine.
Yeah.
LGBTQ plus.
See, even that, I can't even keep track of the thing.
No.
But it's so frustrating to try and do. But no, so I get what you mean about.
Is there any group we haven't affected? We've done women.
We've
and gay people.
Well, no, do you know what has annoyed me recently? It's like I've said this for about 4 years, and recently someone found an old podcast and I was on theirs, and they said, do you still feel like this? And I said, I've never not felt all. I want in comedy, right? I don't want to be famous. Yes. I want to be well known enough that my criticisms are taken seriously and are not discounted as just, oh, he's jaded of another group.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to be like a TV name or anything like that. I mean, it'd be nice to have that as a thing, but like, I just want to fill a room 100 nights of the year and make enough money to carry on doing it, but also be able to do what Stuart Lee does, which is do an article every now and then and have everyone actually respect it, rather than, because people don't, when he does it, go, oh, he's just jaded of, you know, Avalon's axe or whatever. They just take it seriously, and it's like, because I'm lower down the pecking order, do you know what I mean? Like, everyone sort of goes, oh, it's because you didn't get that, and it's like, no, I'm actually concerned about these quotas affecting people negatively or looking Is that fair?
I think it's okay to take the piss out of it as well. I can't remember. Is it an Ivor Dembina joke? I can't remember who said it, but they rob up on stage and say, you know, the the issue is there aren't enough Jewish people in comedy. Well, clearly, that's not an issue.
Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah, it's like there's not enough birthdays in the year.
but that sort of does poke fun at the whole thing. It's a fascinating landscape, and I think it'll probably sort itself out. I'm quite optimistic about it.
Same.
It's just some of these clumsy attempts to try and, you know, I'm trying to think of a suitable metaphor. I can't think of one, but some of these clumsy attempts to address the issue are, well, they're just that, they're clumsy. Yeah. And they can backfire.
So. Yeah, completely. And my, I mean, we'll get to clickbait, and the last thing I was just going to ask you is, my biggest problem, there is a certain, because a lot of comedy is about punching up. I think there's a certain element or a certain niche group of comedians who think having a go at straight white men in particular is punching up. And I understand why it can be, but there's a certain point where I'm thinking, have you seen politics? Like, can you have a go at, like, policies and, you know, it's like having a go at Trump for what he looks like instead of what he's doing. It just seems like having a go at someone, because if you flip that round, and I went, I'm just going to have a go at, you know, gay black women or whatever, you know, like flipping all of them around, you'd be in
jail.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. So I understand why, and I understand there's a power dynamic there. I understand that there's a whole, you know, I'm not saying that. Don't understand why you, if you've now been given, and you've got more of a platform than ever to say things.
Yes.
If you're not just those, you know, straight white male, you should use it for more good.
Leo Kirst makes this point. He's a right-wing comedian who I disagree with on practically everything. I have to say, it's the kind of law when I mention him. But he's also a very, very funny comedian. And he makes the point. He said, you know, people talk about kind of straight white male privilege. He said, you know, where I come from, straight white men are homeless. You know, they don't look like they've got a lot of privilege to me. You know, you've got any social group, including straight white men. You cannot blanket them like that and say, you know, all straight white men have privilege and have a problem, because they're not. No. And for fairly wealthy black comedians to slag off straight white men who have nothing is not punching up. That's punching down.
Well, Alex Hilton has a really good joke that I saw him do, which was about how he's broke, but he's middle class broke, which basically means he can't afford the best brands of pot noodle. And he said it's his fault. Because like, if you're middle class broke, you've got no excuse.
You know,
like any other, you know, it's completely a systematic issue. But middle class, I had enough safety nets. It's all on me. And I spoke to him about it afterwards. I was saying, you know, I feel the same way, where it's, you know, like some people have two layers before they've fucked up everything.
Yes.
I feel like I have four.
I'm
more aware of that than anything.
Yes. But yes. It's part of it. And there is no doubt that overall, white people have massive advantages over most black people. I get that.
And I think it's a good thing, by the way.
No, absolutely. I understand that. So I understand why people want to address that kind of white male, straight white male privilege. However, I know it's an awful cliche, but, you know, not all men, you know, not all white men, not all straight people.
I refuse to say that phrase just because it's been co-opted by a group that I don't agree with.
Yes, but it's nevertheless it is true.
If I do general male versus female stuff in my shows. I did a joke a while ago about Deal or No Deal and how if it's random, why are they allowed to do a celebrity version because it's for charity money? Like, it seems weird to do that. And I specifically named the comedian because I was like, I want to make it clear that it's not all the comedians who are doing it. It's specifically this one in white, and it was a charity that was close to my heart, and so it hurt me. And it wasn't a dig at the comedian, it was a dig at the process of the show and how they'd got involved into it, clearly for publicity, because that's what the show's about.
Yes.
But I wasn't annoyed at them for doing publicity, because I think that's fine. But I was annoyed at the machine that would pump out someone and make them try and make them look like the hero in something that's random. But I had to name them because I don't like the idea of people sort of walking away and being able to Google it anyway. It was fairly obvious in the first couple of times I did it who it was, because they're, you know, huge. She got a good sum of money, which is why the charity went mad and it went viral about how well it went. So, you know, it wouldn't be hard to... But for someone who's lost people to cancer in my family, to watch that show, I didn't watch the whole thing in there because I felt very uncomfortable when I started writing a joke. You know, you can't write a joke and do a TV show. But like to watch the randomness of that amount of money that could save lives.
Yes.
I found very offensive. Yes. And you know, I think attacking an individual, I mean, I wasn't attacking her per se because that's not fair. But to have a go at a thing is fair. To have a go at a group,
yes,
is not necessarily, yes, you know, it's on par with going with gender roles or something. You, yes, know, it's like, have you met them all?
Yes.
If you've met all of them and you've asked everyone, are they all privileged?
Yes.
Then you could probably do it, but yeah.
Yes. Yes, absolutely right. I think it's actually bigoted to attack any group of people,
yeah,
and assign the same opinions.
Even your own group.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, whether whoever they are. And to kind of meet bigotry with more bigotry, I don't think is totally helpful.
No, not at all. So clickbait.
Yes.
Clickbait. Let's move on to a lighter subject.
Something I'm awful at.
Oh, okay.
I'm really, really bad at it. When I first started doing interviews at Broadway Baby, the publisher, Pete Scholl, was always trying to say, no, when you tweet that, do it in this way or phrase it in this fashion, and then, you know, you'll get more clicks. And I can't do it.
Yeah.
So my tweets always got fewer likes and retweets than everyone else's because I just, I said no, because I'm that. That's not what it is. I want to be accurate more than, but apparently that's not the way it works. No,
well, okay, so when you were working for Broadway Baby, did they also, because I think this is an underrated thing that most people don't think about with reviews, I think they think there's a social media intern tweeting out all
no,
the things.
God, no. We no. Do, we, you tweet your own stuff.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it's actually this year working for a radio station is the first time someone else is tweeting on my behalf.
Right.
I've never had that before.
Is that weird?
It's... Yeah, at first. Luckily, they're really good at it. So, you know, there was a few days of me going, what are they doing?
Mm.
But yeah, luckily. I don't know. It's a bit like, you know, when you're used to self-service and someone comes and waits on you. Actually, I'd rather just go and help myself.
It's
a bit like that. I'm a bit control freak, really.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, people tweet their own. I didn't like Broadway Baby, and what they stopped is tweeting reviews to the person who they were reviewing, because a lot of people don't want to read the reviews, especially if it's not a very good review.
I think that's a good idea.
It's just so they stopped doing that. But this is more about tweeting interviews and trying to get people to read comedians' interviews. And
do people read them?
Well, it's interesting because I spent ages kind of properly interviewing comedians and then kind of writing up transcribing the interview and then writing the interview up, and it took like each interview would take like 3 or 4 days,
yeah,
which is how I ended up getting into podcasting, because
I just
recorded it and put it out, and it was like, hang on a minute, I've got another 3 days spare now. It was Keith Chegwin, of all people. Actually, I interviewed Keith Chegwin, and he's just such a happy, lovely chap.
Yeah.
And I thought, how am I going to get this lively, happy chap in? Why don't I just put out the audio? And that was episode one of, you know, on the mic, you know, 5-6 years ago. Yeah. And I thought, I'm not doing written interviews anymore.
this is
the way it works.
This is a big reason why I don't send any of the guests the questions ahead of time, because I think if I'm going to do that, you might as well just answer them and send them back to me. It feels less authentic as a conversation.
And everyone's doing Q&As. I mean, you know, these poor comedians sitting trying to find different ways of answering the same tedious question over and over again.
Mm.
Now, when I interview a comedian and it goes out, I actually cut myself out of the interview, and so the interview is the comedian, excerpts of their stand-up, and then more of what they say, and essentially I'm saying, you know, don't go to a reviewer, go and hear the comedian talk about their own show and listen to some of them perform stand-up and make your mind up on the basis of that. It's a much better way of doing it.
I've gone one step further with the time capsule. Like, I've got them to interview themselves in the past.
Yeah, tell me about the time capsule. Yeah,
have you seen that? I get them.
Your own thing. Yeah, why not? Your own show.
Hello, guys. As if I haven't already done that on every bloody episode up to this point.
You've got so many fingers and so many pastries.
Yes, well, it's because one of them will pay off at some point.
Maybe. White.
Maybe. You know what I mean? Oh, God, it's awful, isn't it? I'm starting another podcast soon and it's driving me insane. Yeah, I know. Because I don't like sleep. That's my problem. No, it's because I'm insomniac. It's not. I don't like it. But clickbait, let's stick to it. Oh, hang on, we're getting thrown out. I think clickbait's ruining the internet, if I'm honest with you. I think the hierarchical problem there is that the ads don't pay as much, which means you need more clicks, which is where clickbait came from. And I think that's a bigger issue in terms of now reviewing and interviewing, in that, say, for example, you interviewed big comedian X. I'm not going to name someone because, you know, it's not worth doing at this point, but big comedian X, that is statistically going to get more hits than mine, for example. Just a nice bit of self-deprecating there. But you know that as a journalist or as a interviewer, it is almost better to invest in newer people, or to at least try and trickle down some of that attention, to try and A, build relationships early, but B, help elevate them, because yes. if you don't interview them, then it's always going to stay the status quo.
Yes.
So how do you navigate that with A, on the mic, and when you B, with Broadway Baby?
Well, with the show now, we have four or five comedians on every episode. We do an hour every night, and somebody did ask the question, you know, do you want to consider the social media profile of each of these guests when you're programming, deciding who goes out? So at least one guest every night should have a strong social media profile. So that, and I said, I'm not doing that.
No.
That may make sense in every other way, except, you know, the only thing is that I'm not going to have any quotas. I'm going to have one musical comedian on to close the show every day, but apart from that, it's all going to be completely random. Everyone's going to get treated the same, whether it's their first show at the suite venue or on the Free Fringe, or if they're, you know, Basil Brushy. Everyone, and that I'm sticking to that. Now, whether that was the right decision or the correct decision, I don't know. But it does, I can see why people do that, but you're right, it is ruining the internet, because I see things that may interest me as I'm going through my timeline, and I'm not going to click on that because it's obvious clickbait, and it might actually be something important. I might be missing something that I really do need to know.
Yeah. No, I wonder just how, because when I spoke to Jonathan Putler, Tom Walker, about Russia Today, he said the same thing that you were saying about Union Jack. He gets free rein.
Yes.
And a lot of people thought Russia Today, they're going to be very strict and stern and whatever. And apparently, no, it's always the one that you sort of,
it's the only way they could do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it? Because, you know, as soon as someone like Russia Today starts editorializing, you know, it's not good, is it? Mm. So, but he's not been with Russia Today for years.
No, this was back in the day.
Yeah. Big success now for Tom, isn't he? He's touring everywhere.
He's doing a great time. Andrew Dawsall's done very well out of it.
Yeah. Well, he stopped working with Jonathan back in January and has now gone with this kind of woke carrier to Titania. Have you spoken to him about that?
I've got him coming on next week.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I've known Andrew a little while now. I knew him just before I got to know Tom, and, like, you know, we gig together, not like best mates or anything, but, like, yeah.
Fun fact, I directed a compilation show featuring four comedians back in the day at the Canal Cafe Theatre in London, and Andrew Doyle was on the list, and it was the first time he performed stand-up, so I actually directed his first stand-up, which was many, many years ago. He was a playwright that he'd done a show called Shamlet, which was a brilliant piece of satire on Shakespeare.
Did you get any credit for Titania, like a little bit of a
No. This was years ago, and Andrew was a very different comedian than he is now. It's good to see him being. I don't always necessarily agree with everything. I quite like listening to, as a bit of an old school lefty, I quite enjoy going to see a right-wing comedian and just laughing at myself and laughing at, you know.
Completely. Some of them I can't sit through, but some of them I'll go and see. And to be honest with you, I have more of a good time than when I'm getting preached to by another lefty.
Yeah.
Because it sort of feels, and that's, it makes me sound like, like you said, the woke craphead or whatever. but genuinely, I laugh harder at when someone points out to me that I'm being, you know, sort of a self-righteous white knight or whatever, than when someone else goes, isn't it great that we're moving forward? And I'm like, it is great, but be funnier. Funny.
You know? It's a Stuart Lee line, isn't it? Did you laugh? No, but I agree to the fuck out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
You
know, yeah,
whereas, totally. I'd much rather. And I think a lot of people on the left really need to regain their sense of humour and actually start seeing, you know, people who they disagree with, you know, the old echo chamber and thing and all of that. We need to get out of that.
This is the thing. It's like, look, here's the thing. If you don't want to listen to or you don't want to read right-wing news, I understand that, because some of it seems very toxic and horrible.
Yes.
But right-wing comedy is just a, well, it's not just a bit of fun, but it is accessible if you're not agreeing with what they're saying.
Yes.
Because you should still be able to watch, you know, like I've seen, I'm not going to name comedians, but I've seen comedians say things that I would, if we were just chatting now, I would call them out and be quite abhorrented by it.
Yes.
But they've said things that, because it's on, and because it's in the caveat of a performance,
yes,
I've laughed at, and and it made me think about why I would have been outraged if it was in another context. And
yes.
And it's helped me, you know, sort of do that. And I prefer that.
I think the stage gives you license to say pretty much anything you like.
Yeah, completely.
You know, I mean, yeah, pretty much.
No, if you want to go on stage and say something abhorrent, yes. I can't stop you and I wouldn't stop you.
Yes.
But however, you know, you've got to be aware that, you know, it's a bit like
the audience is the judge, isn't it? You know, if you say something like that and the audience just sit there going,
what the hell is this guy? Totally.
You know, they don't say it again because they're not getting any laughs.
Completely.
That's the way comedy works. There's a Scottish comedian who a couple of years ago was alleged to have been sending dick pics to other comedians.
I'm aware of this person.
And it was on the cover of several national newspapers, and I was offered an interview with him. And I said, well, you know, one of the people he was allegedly sending dick pics to was one of my mates. So I don't really want to be promoting his show. However, if he's happy to talk openly about, you know, I'm not censuring him. If he's happy for me to ask him questions about this and talk openly about it, I'll still have him on the show. You know, that's my approach to that sort of thing. I would have Louis C.K. on my show as long as he would ask questions, and I'd put him next to the plot pant and say, "How do you feel?"
And what's your side of it? But do you actually think your side's matters right now?
And people, the listener, can make up their own mind. Yeah. So I've interviewed Jim Davis several times. You know, I don't have a problem.
But I think that's a good interview. It's like the Louis Farid thing. You know, he doesn't agree with 90% of the people he has on his documentaries, but he does a good job of challenging them and giving them the opportunity. And I don't think he edits it in the Michael Moore way where, you know, it's very much his agenda is in it. And I think that's why Louis Farid does so well. Yes. Just because as an interviewer, he is open to hearing about...
Yeah, unfortunately, the Scottish comedian I was referring to earlier didn't agree to me, so he wasn't on the show, you know, and then I was accused of censorship as a
but the problem is you can't come out back from that anyway, you know what I mean? Like there's no way of going, I didn't censor him because what's the, you know, whatever. I know we're about to run out of time because we've got to move on, but I'm going to quickly ask you the last quick fire questions and you let me know what your answers are. Obviously that's how this works. What is one unpopular opinion you have about the comedy industry that we've not already covered?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we've covered that, have we not? I don't want to see more comedy on television. I don't think comedy belongs on television. I want people to leave their houses and go and see live shows.
I half agree. Let's talk about it later. What is the biggest mistake you've ever made and how did you overcome it?
In terms of what, in my whole life?
And I keep it open. So
okay,
because I think personal and professional blend so much with everyone.
I was going to say, do you want a top 10? But I've probably got a top 100. Biggest mistake? There's so many. I wouldn't know where to start. I'll be very honest with you. The biggest mistake in my life. It all worked out in the end because we're married now. But you know, and I'm sorry, this is no one's business. But me and my then girlfriend, you know, we split up. And for several years, I thought she's the one that got away. I really miss it. Finally, we got back together and we got married. But for several years, that was the biggest mistake of my life. That's really boring, that's my honest answer.
That's a cute answer.
It was great we got back together in the end. Kate, if you're listening.
Who do you think is the most underrated person in the comedy industry?
Simon Munnery. Without question.
Yeah. Well, not underrated by you, obviously.
I know you have a lot of comedians on, and I've heard other comedians on your show give the same answer. I think, but yes, if you ask comedians who their unsung hero is, the biggest influence is, then Simon Munnery comes up time and time again. He should be a permanent fixture on TV, and in another age, you know, he'd be a household name.
Definitely. Who was the first person to believe in you?
Probably my wife.
What's one thing you wish you were better at?
Spelling.
And last question. If you could give a couple of thousand comedians the best bit of advice about getting more coverage at the Edinburgh Festival, what would it be?
Sack your PR and do your own flyering.
Thank you very much for coming on. That was Martin. Oh, I loved hearing his thoughts on quotas. I loved hearing about why he prefers to watch right-wing comedy than left-wing comedy, even though he's an old-school lefty at heart, the future of the fringe, and more. I think Edinburgh is the best place to be every August, but it is pricing so many people out, and I'd argue that it is worth our time to try and rectify this so that art in general doesn't suffer. I've put the petition that I mentioned in the podcast in the show notes, so if you can find that link and sign it, please do. It's got just under 30,000 signatures now, which is a significant amount of the comedy industry and the performing arts industry in general, saying, look, this is pricing us out. We need help right now. So if you can continue to sign that, that'd be amazing. A quick reminder while you look at that petition, also in the show notes, you'll find ticket links to see me in Perth and Adelaide next month, as well as Wellington and Dunedin in March 2020. With my award-winning, sellout, five-star reviewed 2019 show, Every Room Becomes a Panic Room When You Overthink Enough. I can't emphasize this enough. This is the biggest thing I have ever taken on in my comedy career, both in terms of scale of tour as well as the cost to my life, both emotionally and financially. So if you want to support me and you are in any of those cities, please do come and see a show. If you can't come to a show but you live there, share a tweet with your local friends and encourage them to come down. Any and all help would be massively appreciated. Also, the other thing I'm building in the next year is a collection of dog-friendly comedy shows. The second one in London is happening next weekend at the Bloomsbury Theatre on Saturday the 18th of January. It's from 5 to 7 p.m. and it has... I haven't got the lineup confirmed. It's really annoying me. However, I do have a lot of feelers out for some amazing acts, and they should be confirmed by the time this episode goes live. If they're not, I'll be fucking scared because it's a week away when this goes live. I'm recording this in early November, so just to give you an idea, right now Simon hasn't completed the lineup. Future Simon bloody will have done, but he's not going to update this podcast with the information. Click the link, check out the lineup. Ahead of time, I've sorted out the headliner acts for the London dog shows later in the year. So April, Sindhu V is going to be the featured act, and Sarah Pascoe is the one for May. So if you can come down to either of those or the first one, please do. The lineups are always wicked, and you're going to bring your dog. Dogs and comedy, it's my favorite things in the world combined. I'm also going to be doing three shows at the Glasgow Comedy Festival that are dog friendly compilation shows. I won't be there as I will be in Australia and New Zealand, but my friend Kimmy Loughton will be emceeing and taking over the reins for it. That's on the 15th, 22nd and 29th of March. If you can come down, bring your pup. There's going to be a tennis ball giveaway for good audience members, as well as treats for all the best boys and girls in the audience. I'm not promising they won't go to humans. And yeah, it's just going to be a great night. It's going to be amazing. It's not even going to be a night. It's going to be from 6 till 8pm. So it means that you can go on and see another show, or you can all hang out afterwards with your dogs. Whatever you want to do. If you've enjoyed this episode and you want more information about how to get coverage for your nights or solo shows, I recommend the episode with The Londonist about how to get more press from an indie arts magazine in the capital, or the episode with Ben Williams, the former comedy editor at Time Out London. And the only reason he's the former editor is because they stopped covering comedy. It's a travesty that that's no longer covering it. However, it's still full of timeless information that will help you with other Time Out publications. If you'd like to support me in any way, you can leave us a review, 5 stars ideally, or a 4-star, which reads like a 5, that would be great. Or you can give us a donation, either via PayPal or Patreon, or you can share this link, or any links to my shows, with friends, family, loved ones, colleagues, co-workers, enemies, whichever one you think will get the most out of it. Absolutely all help to spread word of mouth about this show and about my solo shows is massively appreciated. The Ask the Industry podcast is a Fruit That Got in Gravity's Way production for the internet. All elements are created by me, comedian Simon Kane. Thank you very much for listening, thank you very much for subscribing, and thank you very much for rating and donating if you do. I'll see you all in about 14 days' time. Bye! Unless you come to the dog-friendly night, in which case I'll see you all in 7 days' time. Bye!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.